They may not know everything about sports, but the view from their couch is pretty good. So kick back and enjoy a brew, because you know they already are. Here is Eric Dorsch.
What Justin really meant to say was, go blue.
Russ Ivanek.
Taking out of my logical mind for a minute. He's just fun to watch.
And Justin Marcus.
Just park the khaki elephant in the room. I didn't know.
This is Armchair Sports Talk.
Families on the field in anticipation of celebration. Will we get it here before halftime?
How about those four kiddos, though? Being able to get down on that field, what they're going to experience. Incredible.
Wide open. And Smith, what a way to do it. There's only one word that comes to mind. Greatness. Right there, right now, that moment.
I mean, you can't use a much better word than that. Greatness. Drew Brees breaks the all-time passing yards record. Held by Peyton Manning, and before that, Brett Favre. It's one of those things that you don't get to see it very often in your lifetime. What's weird is we've been fortunate to see it three times in our lifetime. But in my opinion, it couldn't go to a better guy. And Russ, I'm not going to lie, I got a little misty-eyed watching him accept the little piece of paper and being handed the football and breaking that record, because it's a huge one.
Oh, it's absolutely tremendous. But I got misty-eyed for a little different reason. From laughing at the Miami Dolphins having wanted Dante Culpepper more.
Yeah.
Good job. Could have had him.
Well, what's hilarious is, we learned about this years ago, he wasn't the Saints' first choice.
No.
To be their quarterback.
He wasn't the Chargers' first choice. He wasn't the Dolphins' first choice.
Sean Payton wanted Tony Romo to come with him from Dallas. He really wanted Tony Romo. And you just wonder, what would life have been like if Tony Romo goes to the New Orleans? I mean, does Brees get a shot maybe in Dallas? And we're seeing something, because no offense, the system works for him, but Drew Brees was going to be successful wherever he went. This guy is just a very good football player. I mention it quite often. You and I got to see him firsthand, and the guy doesn't have the best arm. He's not the most physically gifted, but he's one of those guys where he's going to find the way to beat you however he needs to do it.
Yep, very cerebral.
It was awesome to watch. And you know, being a guy who's a short quarterback, obviously he's taller than me, but coming into the league, they even said, you're too short to play football. We've learned since then that you don't actually have to be 6'4" to be a successful quarterback in the league. In fact, some of the best quarterbacks in the league are right around 6 feet, if they're 6 feet at all. And it's amazing, because he kind of was a little bit of that trailblazer for them. Russell Wilson doesn't have a chance in this league without Drew Brees. Baker Mayfield doesn't have a chance in this league without Drew Brees, because he proved, I can still do what you need me to do. I'm just going to do it in a different way. So it's amazing to see, but it's all kind of ties in for us, because someone who for the longest time has kind of gone toe to toe in the passing yards over the last few years with Drew Brees is our guy, Matt Stafford. And it's not looking like he's going to get anywhere near those kind of yards this year, because he only threw for 183 yards this past week in a win against Green Bay, because he really didn't need to throw the ball.
Yeah, didn't need to when, you're getting all kinds of missed field goals and turnovers setting you up for a 40-yard field. It's a pretty nice way to be on this side of it, for one.
It really is, but the question I want to ask you, because as we've stated a million times, we're diehard Lion fans. We go through the pain, we do it all, but we still support them every week. And during it, you know, we're all texting each other, talking about it. And our buddy Paul, D.O. Pauly Rowe, even said he kind of is starting to feel a little bad for Mason Crosby. At any point, did you kind of go, oh, yeah, this is unfortunate? Or were you like me, jumping up and down, just, this is what we need, this is what we need? It's a weird way to win, because Mason Crosby cost them almost two touchdowns in points. But at any point, were you kind of, you know, softening up a little bit for Green Bay, or were you diehard Lion all the way?
Oh, no. For the, 20 years that the Lions hadn't beaten Green Bay in Green Bay, no, nothing will ever soften me on Green Bay's woes. And I was too busy, really, just celebrating the Lions' rich history of kickers winning games for them, you know, being continued into this game. Jason Hansen, Matt Prater, Mason Crosby, some of the best Lions kickers ever.
Oh, absolutely. It's crazy. It really is. I mean, I had a brief moment where the – I think it was the extra point. Or no, I'm sorry. It was the 56-yard field goal that they put him out when it made no sense. Like, you needed more points.
What are you doing?
Yeah. That's when I was, for a minute, like, what are you doing? Like, what? You need touchdowns right now. I almost reverted to how I feel when the Lions used to – as you said, Jason Hansen used to put Jason Hansen out there just to get that, you know, that spirited lifting – 3 points when we needed, you know, 10 or 14. It was, you need touchdowns right now. A 56-yarder is in no way a way to break a guy's slump. Because even if he just dead middles it, that's no guarantee. He's 0 for 3 already. Like, 1 for 4 is not a stat that makes you go, ooh.
No, that's a tough kick for a hot kicker, let alone whatever was going on with Mason Crosby.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's just a little, it's a little scary. Now, that being said, we win 31-23. That means that, and I believe it was what, we had like 21 points going into halftime?
24 to nothing.
Yep. So obviously that means the second half a little bit scarier for us. Aaron Rodgers, who I think we both come to agreement is the best quarterback in the league right now, is 32 of 52 for 442 yards and 3 touchdowns. So he pretty much did it himself kind of thing. At any point in there, did you ever, in that second half, did you ever actually feel safe? And I'm not saying right as, like, you know, the final play, we kneel, we win. At any point in that third or fourth quarter, did you ever go, no, we're okay. We're all right. We're going to win this.
I felt safe when the clock hit zero.
Okay.
Yeah, that onside kick lined up, and I turned to Mama and said, this would be such an Aaron Rodgers thing to do to win this game still.
Yeah, well, after that big heave he had a few years ago, there's no one's safe, and it's just, it's very, very scary. But to me, it kind of, I think you got to put more, a lot of this on the head coach. He, no good calls in that final fourth quarter. He almost seemed like he didn't really know what to do. Like, I've never been down before. Kind of like the coach from Miracle. He doesn't know what to do. He's never been in this position, doesn't know how to get him back, because You're kicking field goals when you don't need it. You had a legitimate chance to beat us if that onside kick, but you ran it all the way down to 1 second before you scored. Like, you really did kind of, for lack of a better word, shit the bed on this one when you had the opportunity. It's just, it really is, it gives me a little bit of a, you know, comfort to know this Green Bay Titan that it's been for so long is not that this year, not even close.
No. I mean, if we're going to talk about shit in the bed, though, it's probably going down 24-0. Aaron Rodgers fumbling the ball twice, and a kicker who I assume was kicking with his knees. There was a lot of missed opportunities for the Packers, and really the end of it was just emblematic of the whole thing. They're a better team that shouldn't have been in that position, but they have themselves to blame for it.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Well, let's circle over to the team that we actually do care about. Stafford, 14-26, 183. Numbers we don't see very often out of him. He's usually always above 200, but 2 touchdowns. So you take the comfort in knowing we got the win the right way, but we also didn't need to hurl it for 350 and 3 touchdowns. I mean, Kerryon had 12 carries for 70 yards. Like I said, if you give him 12 plus carries, he's going to get you some pretty great yards. He probably could have gone for 100 in this game. For some odd reason, we still have this love for LeGarrette Blount. I mean, he had the same amount of carries, but he had 50 less yards rushing, and obviously 2 touchdowns on goal line touchdowns. But it's just one of those things where slowly but surely this season, I'm noticing a little more balanced of an offense than we're used to seeing. We're used to fourth quarter, we never run the ball. We basically just run the Texas Tech air raid, get 5 receivers out there and just start hurling it around. So this is just me. I'm taking a lot of comfort in knowing we actually have something that resembles a running game.
Oh, absolutely. And it probably would have looked even better if Kerryon doesn't leave with that ankle injury. He had 12 for 70 somewhere in the third quarter and then got shut down after that. We really could we have been talking about a second 100-yard rusher for the Lions?
I think we are. I think we are. Yeah. I mean, I think I saw at one point he was at like 8 carries for a certain amount of yards, but he was averaging like almost 8 yards a carry. So he's one of those guys.
He finished right around 6, too, which is just phenomenal. That's where the top end running backs end up in a game by game basis. So this was really exciting. Let's not hide the fact, though, that as good as his defense, the pass defense looked, the Lions' defense did not force a punt the whole game.
Yeah.
And still gave up 98 rushing yards to a team that abandoned the run game halfway through the game.
Absolutely. Now, circling back, just I there's one more thing I wanted to bring up. When it comes to this whole Kerryon and LeGarrette thing, it's a weird comparison, partly because one of the guys I'm about to mention was our last 100-yard rusher before LeGarrette, or I mean before Kerryon. Is somewhere in here, do you kind of see the Reggie Bush, LaDainian, I'm not going to remember his name now.
Tomlinson?
Lendale White, the other running back when they were at USC together. Do you kind of see that, you know, that thunder and lightning? Like, LeGarrette, we know, is going to be the get the short yards, you know, move the pile kind of guy. Kerryon is, not slowly, but his Kerryon is more or less proven, I'm your breakaway big-time back that eventually I'm going to be the number one guy every time.
I think that's what they're trying to style them as, that thunder and lightning combo, and that's why the carries have been similar for them. That, hey, Blunt will come in and just ram the pile and wear people down, and Kerryon will get the outside carries.
Mm-hmm.
One half of that equation is working well, and that's it. I think they need to reduce Blunt's role a little bit here because it's, yes, he got the two touchdowns. He fell down from the one. And there's a skill to that. Well, let's just use him for that skill. We don't need to see him at a 3rd and 15 or something.
Absolutely.
Geez, Kerryon looks good.
He looks very good.
Yeah, that initial burst. There was a couple times where he got handed the ball, and I thought, oh, well, shit, there's a loss. And it's a 5-yard gain. Just because of his first 3 steps, he gets past the defensive end, who should have had him, who had the angle on him. So this is a little uncomfortable as a Lions fan in a good way.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's a lot of fun to watch, but I think it's that much more fun for us because we haven't seen it in so long.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you take away those Reggie Bush years, which I'm not trying to take anything away from the guy. The guy was pretty decent when he was here.
I will. He was okay. He was better in Madden.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not saying that, but I'm just like he wasn't like some dud like, you know, Javid Best ended up being for us. Obviously, yeah. Javid Best was injury related, but even when he was healthy, he never showed signs of being anything that would have been effective for us. So it's just one of those things where it's that much more enjoyable for us because we're seeing a guy do things we're not accustomed to seeing, and he doesn't play for the other team. He plays for us. So it's a lot more fun to see. Speaking of guys that do things we're not used to seeing, we're a little more used to seeing this because we had one of the best do it, but Kenny Golladay, I would like to point out, I kind of called this a little bit, not to this level, but this guy is just stepping up and being the big playmaker we really need right now in that passing game.
Yeah. I mean, he's something else right now. It's a blast to watch.
I don't want to get ahead of myself. I said it for a brief moment the other day during the broadcast, and then I immediately took it back. His touchdown reception, he said, I'm bigger than you are. I'm gonna go get this ball. You really don't have a chance of getting it from me. It reminded me of someone. I think we all remember him.
Don't you say it.
I'm not going to say it. You know who I'm talking about.
Because I thought about it too.
I'm not putting him in that category because that category is not something remotely that he's there yet. He has a lot of work to do to prove it. For that brief moment, you saw it. You saw his ability to do it.
Absolutely. It was that kind of a catch.
Absolutely. But you know what it was, too? It was a big show of something Stafford needed.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the early parts of his career, Megatron was his safety blanket. It was one of those, you're not open, you're not open, you're not open. There's Calvin. Let's just throw it in the air.
Yeah, let's hope this works. It seems like that. It seems like Kenny is rarely his first read. But when you get into the scramble drill stuff, it's probably going to him.
Absolutely. It really is. And my question for you on this, because I want to definitely touch on this defense, but my one question for you on this is getting ahead of ourselves. We have a guy, Golden Tate, who, as I've said multiple times, I think is one of the top receivers in the league every given week because of what he brings to you after the catch. He's a guy who is not under contract after this year, and from everything he's done in his career, he's going to demand some serious coin. Is part of you a little more comfortable knowing that he may not be back here next year because Galladay is showing signs of what he's showing?
I guess, just in the fact that it wouldn't be a one-horse show anymore. I'd be more comfortable if it was Marvin Jones leaving.
That was going to be my next thing. Or if for some odd reason Tate says, you know what, I love Detroit, I want to be here, and he takes that, not pay cut, but he takes the lesser money than you would expect. Is Marvin Jones kind of on borrowed time right now? Because Marvin's not really stepping up right now. He's not playing great football this year.
No, I mean, and there was a drop there, and just there continues to be routes that he just seems out of sync with Stafford. Now, he's still a talented wide receiver, but as much as I was not ready to say it at the beginning of the year, it looks like Galladay has surpassed him as far as production goes.
I think he has. I mean, I said at the start of the year I thought Galladay was going to be our number two at some point. And I just think that's happening now. I think he's...
Yeah, it's starting to, and I did not... I was 100% in the other camp.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, but think about it. At the start of this year, I think after 2 weeks, I was starting to doubt Tate because he just wasn't producing the way you'd want to see him produce. If you want to label yourself the number one receiver on this team, there's expectations that come with being the number one receiver on this team, and Tate wasn't giving us that. Now, the last couple weeks, he's been right there. I mean, Tate, as you said it a couple weeks ago, Tate's that guy who he's going to average right around that 70 yards a game kind of guy.
Yep, and seven, eight catches. Yep.
That's the thing, though. Because we didn't throw the ball this much, he only had five catches for 42 yards. No one on this – I mean, Galladay was 2 yards short of 100 yards, but everyone else was sub 50 yards, and that's just a fact of an effective run game. And one other thing, we recovered three fumbles this past week. Obviously – the first one I have to bring up because it's the most controversial of them. I'm going to ask you straightforward. Was that punt a fumble?
No, I didn't think so.
You didn't think so. Okay.
No, I thought that hit the gunner's arm, not the back.
Okay. Okay. This is where we're going to conflict because I looked at this thing at every angle I could find. And I see where some of those TV angles have you going, oh, yep, that hit him. But I genuinely think it hit a Green Bay player. And then hit us, and I think it was a good recovery. Now, obviously, I'm a huge Lions fan. There's no bias here, but I think it was a good recovery. It led to a touchdown.
I mean, hey, we've had shit calls go against the Lions.
Absolutely.
Ever? I mean, that's part of the game. It was just nice to see him come out on the good side of it, whether it was or was not. I was waiting for it to be overturned because that's usually how that goes with us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, the other two, one from Deshaun Hand, which, amazing play. Amazing play.
Give that man a hand.
Absolutely. I love it. The thing for me, the question I guess I want to ask, there are three new defensive players on this team this year, and all three to me are big impacts, but taking Deshaun Hand out because I think he was genuinely accepted when drafted, Romeo Okwara and Eli Harold. Two questionable things when we got them. No one was really sure what to make of them. I'm pretty sure they are turning out to be pretty good decisions that were quiet moves that no one really expected.
Oh, absolutely. Especially Okwara for me. That came out of really nowhere. He came from the Giants, who, yeah, they have a good pass rush, so I suppose there was a chance there was some surplus being lost.
Mm-hmm.
But when the Lions picked him up, I was very surprised at his production and his immediate usage. I mean, there's been weeks where he's the only defensive lineman to get more than 80% of the snaps.
Yeah.
Which is amazing for a guy that was not in training camp with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's early in the season. No, they've been surprising, which has helped this pass rush to be formidable, but the run game still sucks, so there's still a lot of room to go.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and it's really tough to get that kind of momentum when the best player you have has only played a quarter of football in this entire season.
Yeah, your best defensive lineman,
It's very tough. So it really feels like a patch defense, but the problem is these patches are turning out to be pretty good ones. I mean, I texted you guys after the game. Deshaun Hand is on my list of players that will be the future of this team if everything keeps going the way they're going. You know, all things.
They need him to be.
And it's phenomenal. I mean, Okwara had three tackles. Two of them were sacks. This guy had two sacks yesterday or the other day on the best quarterback on the planet. And he's not a slow guy by any means. Aaron Rodgers has proven he can get away from people. It was it was phenomenal to watch. It was just so great.
Oh, and that's a credit to the secondary too, because usually pushing Aaron Rodgers out of the pocket is not a good thing. Usually he can scramble and kill you.
Yeah.
But the man coverage held, gave the linebackers and the defensive linemen enough time to drag him down. It was something I wasn't used to seeing happen to Aaron Rodgers, let alone the Lions doing it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess my question, would you say that those sacks were big plays?
I'd say they were.
Maybe one of them has potential to be play of the week. It's possible.
Ooh.
I don't know. I see
where you're going with this.
You see where I'm headed with this. We have our plays of the week. By the way, I'm going to take the technicality because if I'm not mistaken, the votes are in and I won by 1% this past week. 33-33, 33-33, 34.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take the W. I'm like that. But honestly, this week it's kind of good because two of the plays are kind of good plays. They really are. And one of them is a play where I see where Justin was going because it was just a bad, bad call. It's more of a play of the week that the officials screwed up.
Wait. Two of these plays are good. The other one, I see where he was going.
Yeah, absolutely.
The subtext in that one was not meant.
No, not at all. I would never let it be. All right, so plays of the week. We'll lead off with Jay first. Obviously, in case you haven't noticed, we're a little bit into this. Justin's not really here to defend himself today, but he sent us a little treat that we're going to play later, and I enjoyed listening to this thing. I listened to it 3 times already, and it's phenomenal. So here is Justin's play of the week.
Against defenses like this, they need to just cash in when they can. Here's what the Eagles needed, but a flag is thrown, and we'll see if it's for the hit on Cousins. Michael Bennett got home, and Bennett pleading his case.
Personal foul, rubbing the passer, number 77, defense, half the distance of the goal, first down.
Real quick, can you explain to me how that's roughing the passer, or what roughing the passer in the NFL is anymore?
Supposedly, there's something about not bringing your whole body weight down on the quarterback, which
is called tackling, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. There's this whole questionable thing about, you know, the physics behind being able to do it. It's really becoming such a more nuanced thing to be able to tackle the quarterback without drawing a flag. And we know Clay Matthews hasn't figured it out, at least. And there's a bunch of other defenders. You basically have to tackle the midsection and only the midsection and roll away from him as you fall down. It's getting tougher and tougher to watch this league as they're trying to make it better by policing some of these things and going about it the wrong way.
I'm sorry, you said physics and I fell asleep.
It was a
bad call. It really was. There's just no way around. I mean, it's one of those things where this year, roughing the passer is kind of becoming what is a catch was a few years ago.
Oh, my God. Which still isn't fixed.
It's still not fixed, but at least, like, we're kind of getting to, like, understand where the gray areas are for them. So, you know, you can pretty much come to the terms of, oh, well, there's one of those gray areas. That's not going to be a catch. Even though to everyone else on the planet, that's a catch. So I'm really surprised for the Lions game this past week. One of Green Bay's guys caught, I use air quotes, caught the ball, but the nose of the ball hit the ground and it moved a little bit. A few years ago, they probably would have ruled that a catch because they wouldn't have any clue what to call it. But this week, they actually said incomplete pass. So they're getting there. They're just taking their dear sweet time getting there.
Oh, yeah.
Next is going to be your play of the week. Very interesting play. Not the best throw I've ever seen, but interesting all the same.
Here's Beckham looking to throw. Wide open, it's Barkley. Inside the 20, still going. Into the end zone, touchdown.
It's quite a cool play.
Yeah, it was an ugly throw. I'm not going to lie to you. It was not a pretty throw, but I love that it was the answer to a question that even OBJ didn't know the answer to. In an interview, he had said, I don't understand why we can't throw the ball more than 20 yards. And for the first time in history, the answer actually was just give the damn ball to the diva wide receiver.
Yeah.
That alone, that's all I could think of when he threw it is, holy crap, they finally threw it more than 20 yards down the field, and all it took was Odell throwing it. So, his 57-yard touchdown to Saquon Barkley, the only two talented people they have on that offense, that'd be my play of the week.
It's a fair play of the week. I mean, he threw the ball not only 20 yards downfield, but about 25 yards in the air, because that thing was, I said it right away, I've seen punts that didn't go that high.
And oh, yeah.
It was very, I mean, it's a great play. To me, though, I obviously didn't keep the call because it was a little jumbled, but they more pointed out this was a great way of taking advantage of Saquon, because if you put the ball in OBJ's hands like that, no one's paying attention to anyone else. Everyone's eyes go right to him, and then you realize, oh, wait, a guy who's in the running to be one of the best running backs in the league in this near future is wide open. I mean,
they left him so alone.
I mean, I made the joke that literally, but because the ball was in the air so long, he could have ordered Jimmy John's and it would have been there before anyone got near him. So it was an interesting play. It was pretty cool. I decided to stay right here at home because to me, it was a great play that helped us, but it was also one of those plays where I saw it, watch it develop, and all I saw was this guy's going to do some amazing, amazing things if he's just given the opportunity. So this would be my play of the week.
Packers from their own 34. Rodgers has the shotgun snap. Pressure comes. Rodgers in trouble. Going to get hit. Ball's on the ground. It is free, and the Lions have got it. Detroit football at the 29-yard line of Green Bay. Coming out of there is Deshaun Hand. He's got the football, and he's the one that jarred it loose. Rookie, that is big. That is so big.
I love Dan Miller's calls. The man just makes great calls. It's phenomenal. My thanks to Dan Miller, Lomas Brown for that call on WJR. But I watched that play unfold, and it's true. He came around the edge, had to run the whole line, caught up to Rodgers, stripped the ball, and then was the guy that recovered the strip. We're talking about a big ugly down in the trenches doing this against a very, very athletic person. It was an amazing play to watch.
Yeah, no, it was a blast, and just extra push for it because it made Green Bay Packers fans miserable. Now, that's always a nice plus.
Oh, I enjoy that so much. I really do. So those would be our plays of the week. We'll get the poll up here in a little bit, and you guys can vote on it. We're having a lot of fun with this. We're still trailing Russ, so Justin and I need to make up some ground. So make sure you pick the right play. Wink, wink.
But, my play.
Absolutely.
Everybody likes a winner.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's more than fair. Lions are on a bye this week, so we won't have to make any predictions. I'm going to predict they win this week. The spread is zero, so it's going to be a close game. But
yeah, it's a pick 'em.
It's a pick 'em. You really got to think about it. Now, moving on to a game where, again, I called it. No one wanted to believe me.
Oh, boy.
But I called it, and I texted him right afterwards. I didn't want to be right about this. I really, really
yeah,
was
a little
hoping.
Bit you did.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I want to, just for the you know, purposes of this show, being right helps. But it was one of those things where I know what he was going through because our boy was there at this game watching it firsthand. So,
yeah.
Michigan State falls to Northwestern 29-19. This one's going to be brief because Jay's not here to defend himself, and I just don't want to be mean more than I have to, but it's coming right out. Russ, this is not a good football team this year. It really is. They have a lot of problems going on right now in Michigan State.
Oh, yeah. Well, stop me if you've heard me say this before. They have an elite run D and an awful pass defense. It's really scary. They gave up 373 yards and three touchdowns to Northwestern.
Yeah.
This is not what we're used to seeing out of MSU, really, in D'Antonio's tenure recently. I mean, they couldn't establish a run, and they couldn't finish a game strong again, which is becoming a trend, you know, letting Central Michigan come back into a game when they had them pinned down 31-3. And they were up 19-14 late in the third quarter in this game before letting it slip away. It's not as polished of a product as you would expect from D'Antonio, and man, I'm starting to get real sick of saying that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, it's not for lack of trying. I mean, Felton Davis did everything he could to win this game for them. He was their leading rusher with two carries for 50 yards and a touchdown, and he was their leading receiver with almost 100 yards and a touchdown. I mean, they have some talent out there. But my big question is, how much longer can they run under the assumption that Brian Lewerke is their quarterback? I mean, 31 of 51, but 31 of 51 for 329, one touchdown, one interception. You're telling me you threw 51 times and only one time that found the end zone? You have to start worrying, especially when you have a guy like Felton Davis. I mean, and not, like, don't get me wrong, these are all D1 athletes. None of these guys are Joe Schmo walking off, you know, off the tailgate and just putting on pads. These guys are all pretty good at what they do, or else they wouldn't be at this school. So it's one of those things where, I mean, I don't want to think he's the problem, but this guy was supposed to be, you know, a great quarterback coming into this year, and I'm still waiting to see that great quarterback shine that he's supposed to have.
Yeah, yeah, you throw the ball 51 times, you got to score more than 19 points.
It's
pretty
tough.
Cut and dry there.
It is. Like I said, this one's going to be brief, so we'll go right to it. Penn State's an 88% favor on the match predictor, and the spread's 13.5 points. This is a Penn State team that I did not give a lot of, you know, thought to going into this year. I thought losing Barkley was going to be too much for them, but it clearly hasn't been. And your boy McSorley is not that bad. So
he's okay.
He's playing pretty good. So the question has to be asked. I mean, do the Spartans even stand a chance in this game?
No. No, I mean, this is where McSorley's buddies start cutting up his mixtape for his Heisman reel.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, they made Northwestern's passing attack look really good. And they're not bad, don't get me wrong. But
no.
But then you're going to go against McSorley and expect to do better?
Clayton Thorson is no Trace McSorley, I'll say that right now.
Yeah.
He's not.
State fans maybe find something else to do on Saturday.
Okay. So Penn State victory.
Yeah.
Does Penn State cover the spread of 13.5?
I think they do.
Okay. So we're looking at a two touchdown W. All right.
Yep.
I'm not going to argue at all. I'm right there with you. We know my feelings towards the State team this year. I give them their credit when there's the credit to give. I just think this game's going to be a tough one to find bright points to. I really do. So, and who knows, maybe we will see D'Antonio try something different. I mean, they're still a 3-2 team. It's not like they're 0-5 going into this game. They're still a team with a winning record. It's just it's a winning record that doesn't boast a lot of confidence because you didn't come up with big wins against huge teams. That's where it's bad.
Absolutely.
So it's tough to come across, but we'll see. It could be interesting. But I something tells me the Spartans are a 500 team after this week, and that's tough. Moving on to our Wolverines, they pull off a 42-21 win over the Maryland Terrapins. It's a win, but I'm not going to lie to you. Watching this game, I never felt comfortable. I never got comfortable in this game watching it. We come up with a win, and it's a pretty nice distance we get the win on, but I just never felt comfortable against Maryland. I don't know where you're at with it, though.
No, it really took until the fourth quarter for me to get comfortable, and I think it was because of the start, and I think it's time we kind of accept that this Michigan team is just a team that starts games slow. I mean, the Notre Dame game, the Northwestern game, this game, I mean, it was down 17-0 at half of the Northwestern game, up 17-7 at half of the Maryland game. This is, you're not going to be able to get away with that against good teams, and we saw that against Notre Dame.
A football team that starts slow in Michigan. We've never seen that before.
Yeah, why does that sound familiar?
Why do I feel like you're trying to compare both these teams to Lions?
Huh.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I'm just talking about what I know.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, I'll try and stay on the positive side because it was a 42-21 win, and let's keep that in perspective.
Yeah.
Covered the spread, beat a Big Ten opponent, even if it was the Terps. Pushed them right back into the little shell. Go eat some crab cakes. It really was this simple for me, though. Higdon had over 100 yards. And in every game that he's had over 100 yards, Wolverines have won. So keep feeding the guy, keep getting over 100 yards, and the rest of it will take care of itself.
I agree. And the nice thing for me, because I've been kind of a stickler on it all year, Patterson goes almost 300 yards in this game. 19-27, 282, three touchdowns and an interception. It's kind of a game, albeit against Maryland, that I wanted to see. I wanted to prove that if we give you the opportunity to throw the ball 25-plus times, what's it going to look like? Are we going to see are we going to see a 12 of 25 for 187 and 1-1, or are you going to show us that if we let you start hurling the ball, you'll do the right thing with it? Because like I've said, I'm a big fan of Caron Higdon. I think right now he's one of the more prominent backs in the Big Ten. I mean, he's playing great for us. But we both know eventually we're going to come up against a team that he's not going to be able to do 25 carries for 103 yards. We're going to come up against that team that the passing game's going to have to step up, and I want to see what it's going to look like when it has to. And Shea proved, hey, we can still throw the ball. I mean, Zach Gentry had seven receptions for 112 yards. I mean, that's great, especially from a guy that is a tight end. He's not even the prominent receiver. He's the tight end.
No, and this has been a couple big games for him. Not too consistent, but it seems like this passing attack really only wants to feature one guy at a time, and they're very much willing to change around who it is. This week it was Gentry. Last week it was Collins, 6 of 73. Then a couple weeks before that, we all know about Donovan Peoples-Jones and his big touchdown parade there.
Absolutely.
They like to attack you in different ways, and Hey, it's nice that it's effective. Just good luck figuring out who it's going to be effective for week to week.
It's true. Now, I want to get into the matchup this coming week, but this is kind of a weird question because I didn't think I'd ever have to ask this question. The matchup predictor, at any point leading up to this season, if I told you that Michigan would be the 74% favorite to win this game against Wisconsin, what would your response have been?
Oh, I would have thought that that it was being a little flooded with some people drinking too much Maize and Blue Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
That's a bit high of a number for a team that started the year in the top 10 and was supposed to walk through their side of the Big Ten. But, hey, Michigan, 8.5-point favorites right now. Something's going on with that Wisconsin team where maybe the cheese has gone bad.
I honestly expected this to be a 6-0 Wisconsin team that had not lost by or had not, you know, been any closer to 10 points at the end of every game. I expected a 2-touchdown victory for them every week, and that's just not happening. This is a Wisconsin team that I think they're really realizing that maybe it's just the side of the Big Ten they play in that had them so confident, because they are struggling, and they're struggling big time. And I'm with you, though. I never would have been able to accept anyone telling me that we were 70% favorites to win this game. But the question has to be asked. This isn't the first real big test outside of Notre Dame that we're going to face. First Big Ten team that really is supposed to be a Big Ten contender. What's going to happen here? Is Michigan rolling enough that they can pull off a Wisconsin W? W against Wisconsin?
I think, yes. They need to, should, and will beat Wisconsin.
Okay.
We want to start talking about the spread. I think the smart money is to take with Wisconsin because 8.5 seems a little rich, especially with a coach that has won at least 9 games against the spread for each of the last 2 years. So maybe he doesn't exactly get the credit that he deserves sometimes and his teams. But one simple stat, when both teams played Nebraska, Michigan gave up 2.4 yards per play.
Okay.
Wisconsin gave up 7.62, which is abysmal. That ranks them well outside of the top 100 in the country. This is not a good defense.
No, it's not. It's really not.
And Michigan's offense is finally humming, and this is probably going to be the best passing attack Wisconsin's seen so far in the year. They haven't played a lot of tough opponents. So that's a bad number against some not good teams. It's going to be a fun one for Maize and Blue.
Okay. I'm with you, but it's a W, and it's going to be an enjoyable one, but I'm trying not to get too far ahead of myself. I'm trying to get too excited, but I think I have to.
Where's the fun in that?
Yeah, I have to. I think this is now hear the words I say. I'm not giving real numbers here. I think this is a double-digit win.
Yeah.
I think this is easily a 10-plus. I think this is easily a 10-plus point win. I think that now that's to say that it could be a touchdown and an extra point or a field goal. This could be a 2-touchdown win. I'm just thinking, I see this game ending, all things being equal and how they've played. I could easily see this game ending 28-17.
Yeah,
I really could.
That's fair. I mean, that's that's 100% fair. They're going to have trouble against this Michigan defensive line with a quarterback that has not lived up to his billing.
No, they haven't. And this defense for Michigan is a good defense. It really is.
Yeah.
So I think this is going to be it. I'm going to go 28-17. I am.
All right.
So that's where we're at with that. Now that we've gone as high as we can go in the way of optimism, we're going to drop right back down. We're going to talk about the Detroit Red Wings, a team that I just, like I said it before the show, I don't want to be a fan anymore. I really don't want to. We're three games into the year, and I'm already really hurting. I mean, 3-2 loss to Columbus, 4-2 loss to L.A., and then a 3-2 loss in a shootout to the Ducks the very next day. This team is a very tough team to be a fan of right now.
Well, if you're expecting them to win, then yeah, absolutely. But every single loss gets us a little bit closer to Jack Hughes. So I'm okay with that. I mean, the first loss against Columbus, that was tough. Getting outshot 2-1 was tough, right? I think it was like 39-20. The next two games were close, hard-fought games that they lost. So
yeah,
you got to see progress. I mean, that's exactly what I want to see. I thought they played well enough to beat the Kings. I thought the Wings dominated a lot of that game, but didn't fall that way for them. So, hey, a little bit closer to that top overall pick.
I think, speaking for me, the L.A. game, I think you got to think, one of them's an empty netter, so there's 3-2.
Yep.
That first goal, the Kopitar goal, just to me looked like something that, you know, Bernier wasn't expecting. That backhand did not look like a very hard goal to cover. It just didn't seem like he did not expect it to be what it was. So, I mean, you look at this, and it really is a 2-2 game if you get those two back. Now, that's a dream because we can't get those two back. But the empty netters always make it hard because you realize that this game was a lot closer than you think. I just think we really struggled against them late, and that shouldn't have happened because we like you said, we hung with them for the longest of times there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tough. And then that Anaheim game, I don't know. I I thought we had that one. I really did. And then I look back, and it's all of a sudden in shootout. But
yeah.
And I mean, that means that for the majority of the, you know, regular game, we played them even match. It's just shootouts are tough. I mean, shootouts to me are literally just flip a coin and one, like, you know, that's how it's going to be because you don't know on any given night who's going to pull what.
Oh, right. It should be. But for anyone it's not going to be, it's going to be the one guy in the NHL who's leading everyone in shootout percentage.
Yeah.
And that's Franz Nielsen.
Mm-hmm.
You think the Wings would be winning more of these.
You would think.
Yeah. But no, in the Ducks game, there was at least something encouraging. I really liked the play of Rasmussen.
Yeah,
I think he made a couple heady plays. I mean, the one Bertuzzi goal was set up basically because of Rasmussen. He saw where the play was going. He left the corner, came out so Nielsen could pass in the puck, gave a no-look drop pass to Bertuzzi, who was all by himself with the goalie.
Mm-hmm.
And then later he peeled away from a play, and as soon as the defender tried to chip the puck out of the zone, Rasmussen was right there. He's showing a vision that I didn't think he had. I thought he was more of a physical, you know, big type of guy, more of a net front presence that he was down in Tri-City.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, he's playing in space a lot better than I was expecting. So, I mean, that's a win in my book. And the Wings aren't going to have a lot of wins in the win column, so I'll take these wins where I can.
Oh, absolutely. I those two, Rasmussen and Bert, those are two guys that I'm putting a lot of faith in because I see a lot of potential there. And I think for me, it's just more comforting because it's youth getting an opportunity.
Yep.
Obviously, it's not those big name draft picks like, you know, Zadina and Valeno that we would love to see but can't see right now. But it gives you hope for the future that we do have some young talent and it just needs a little bit of time. And I'm hoping that it steps up big because if some of the young defensive talent steps up big, Danny DeKeyser can go sit at the end of the bench. I want to say it was the Kings game or the Anaheim
game. Oh, were you complaining about him?
No. It was the Kings game I was complaining. So it was the Anaheim game where they were playing 3-on-3 hockey in overtime and DeKeyser was handling the puck with 10 seconds left to go. Why the heck are you even touching the puck? Your only purpose out there right now is to just make sure that you're back on D if we miss the shot. Give the puck to Nyquist, who was sitting right there, and let him do it. He's got a little bit better track record scoring goals for us.
Yeah, a little bit. It doesn't help that every other defenseman on the team is hurt. But, yeah, even then, hey, just kick the puck over to him if you need to.
But I think what hurt me even more wasn't, I mean, I don't like him handling the puck, but it's that they passed it to him and he whiffed. He literally whiffed. All you do every day of your life is play hockey, and you whiffed on a pass that Stevie Wonder could have taken a better shot on.
No.
That was not a fast pass. It wasn't like someone ripped it over there. It was a nice, easy little, here's the puck pass, and he whiffed. So I'm harboring some hatred right now. It really hurts. The one game we got to preview, because it's tomorrow, and obviously we won't be doing another show before then, is Toronto. And this one's a little interesting because I believe that's the team that a beer bet is being held on right now between Tavares and Matthews. I don't have the drop again, but I have Austin Matthews, so I'm more than happy if he scores. It's just one of those things, though. I guess the only real question to ask is, how bad is this going to be?
Oh, it's going to be fun to watch if you just watch for hockey. If you watch to be a Wings fan, oh, no.
Yeah,
it's going to... John Tavares and Austin Matthews right now are on pace for approximately all the goals.
Mm-hmm.
It is phenomenal what they've been able to do, and they seem to be egging each other on. Because the Leafs the other day had 4 goals in 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
This is just an offensive attack that they see what one does, and then they have just as talented of a guy to do the same thing. And the Wings don't have, what, enough to contain one of them, probably, let alone two. It's not going to be pretty. And really the only hope is if Howie can hold him in it.
Okay. I'm going to give you an over-under, and I just want you to give me what you think. Over-under, we keep this game within 3 goals.
Ooh, 3 goals? Over. Over. Yeah, I think a 5-1, 6-2 game is in the offing.
Okay.
It's not a great Toronto D, so there's the chance. But this is a Wings team that was just playing an Anaheim team that had nobody left because everyone was hurt.
Yeah.
You know, someone ripped through the locker room with a chainsaw or mumps, right, and took everybody out. And they still only scored 2 goals. I'm not confident in the Wings scoring anything other than whatever Larkin can will them to do.
That's fair. I'm going to say under. Just for the fact that I think, all things being equal, I'm going to say that we said 3 goals. I'm going to say it's right at that.
Okay.
So I see something more like a 4-1, 5-2 kind of game. Like I said, I see some talent on this team. It's just a question of, is that talent going to be able to step up when we need it to? And this is a big game. This is a rivalry game. This is a game against a team that everyone in Detroit wants this W. It's an early one. It really, in all things, it doesn't mean that much right now. It's 4 games into the year, but it's one of those morality boosters. You beat Toronto, it propels you for a little bit. And I want us to win. I really do. But I think we need to keep this game within 2 goals to feel any kind of moral victory. And I think it'll probably be like a 5-2 game would be my prediction.
Well, I hope it's closer to what you're thinking than what I'm thinking.
Absolutely. We're staying with the Wings here. It's Justin's 60 seconds assault, and he couldn't be here today, so we want him to have his moment. So here we are, 60 seconds assault on what Justin Marcus has to say today.
60 seconds assault, and I should have seen this coming. I should have pieced this together and called my shot that this was going to happen. I owe an apology to my fellow armchair hosts for failing in my duties of seeking out this assault. Little Caesars Arena is an $862 million home that just got $4 million more expensive for all the wrong reasons. As a loyal fan, like all of our listeners are, it's an easy roadmap to see that what was going on was going to happen. The Wings have a history of making the wrong moves. What they've done in the past, they've forced anyone who visits the men's room in Joe Louis Arena to use a trough for decades. They gave Dan Cleary a verbal contract to come back home, and the team did so and gave them that place to play on our team. They also traded around a first-round draft pick for Kyle Quincy for the second time. And what do they miss out on? Andre Vasilevsky. You might know him. He's a goalie for Tampa Bay. We have been trending downward for years, and the results of that are lower attendance. You got less people coming into the stadium well before the stadium was built and well before the Pistons were leasing out space in what should rightfully just be the Wings' home. So what do? We put in seats with the longest visible wavelength of color, which is red. And how do we fix it? Oh, we're going to replace those seats with black ones so that the surface, we don't look like an empty stadium to the public on the broadcast anymore. A team that was recognized as a dynasty, the golden standard in hockey in the 90s, and the birthplace of the European style of play with the Russian Five and the self-proclaimed Hockey Town, doesn't do this. The saltiest of salts goes to the LCA and their continuance of terrible management. We are going to spend $4 million on a mistake that is freshly built only after like a year, and we're going to rip them out and put in black seats. Because what's more attention onto a glaring mistake by drawing more attention to it by trying to fix a mistake? How about lowering ticket prices? How about giving people an opportunity to actually watch your product by starring some of the young guns from Grand Rapids? No, no. That would be too easy. What are we going to do? We're going to rip out seats and give you guys new seats. And it's going to be dark in that arena because that's what that place has turned into, which is an abysmal hole of darkness. I have a huge issue with this, and we are quickly becoming the Dead Wings much faster than we're becoming Hockey Town.
Yeah, that one was pretty salty, I would say. Justin not happy about this. And for those that, you know, obviously you just heard it, but for those just, you know, paying attention now, the Red Wings have announced they're going to actually change the seats in LCA from red to black. And Russ, I was talking to some coworkers today. This to me might be the dumbest thing I've ever heard of in my life, because your team name is the Red Wings. Everything in the stadium, for the most part, is red. What the hell do black seats have to do with going to LCA? It makes no sense.
Well, I'm going to reason it in two ways. One that I think is realistic, and the other one if I'm wearing my rose-colored glasses. We'll start with the second one. Hey, the Pistons play there too, and maybe that's what they want.
Their jerseys too, though. Okay, I see where you're going.
I know that's the tough part, but they're like primarily blue, mm-hmm. and they have their city edition jerseys are all blue and gray. Like,
yeah.
I'm thinking maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know.
Okay.
Even I'm not believing it as I'm saying it. I'm trying to reason it out, but hey, NBA season starting soon. Maybe they can spin it that way.
You gave it a shot.
I tried. Sorry, Ilitch Holdings. I think the reality is someone with more money than sense up at the top was sick and tired of everyone making the jokes about people getting lost in the concourse or just not buying seats to begin with, and they didn't want the blaring red seats to show up on the TV anymore. So they dulled it down, and now it'll just look like a black hole, where all of our hopes and none of the money are going for those tickets.
But my question to ask there then is, obviously it's black, so it's dark and all. That's great. Yep. But anyone not wearing black is going to be noticeable on the camera. All you've done is just make it so now we can see who's sitting where. Because it used to be Red Wings jerseys, so you'd get like 50 red jerseys in a section, and you go, oh, okay, so there's someone there, but there's still people. Now, if you're not wearing a black T-shirt or, a hoodie, you're going to clearly, be noticeable. So you're really not fixing the problem.
No. I mean, fixing the problem would be, recognizing the product that you're putting out there and the city that you're in and not charging top 10 ticket prices in the league. That would be fixing the problem, or starting to.
Well, and then that's what someone mentioned to me, is if you're having this problem, why don't you do what the Lions did and lower concessions? People will want to do that. No one wants to pay $11 for a beer. Drop it down to $8. You feel like you're cutting yourself, but in reality, more people are going to spend that money because in their head, they're getting the discount.
Oh, right. It'll help. Yeah. I mean,
so I'm not on board with this. Yeah. I'm not on board with this at all. I think it's a weird way to try to, for a morality change, but it's not going to do any different. The ticket's still going to be as expensive as it was when they had red seats, so it's not going to, they've got black seats. I have to go. It's just not going to happen.
No. Hey, but speaking of special seats, speaking of empty seats.
Okay.
We're we're missing some Tigers broadcasters now.
That's the rumor. That's what I hear.
Yeah, Mario and Rod not going to be back. Apparently, you can't get in a fight over a special chair for your back issues, choke somebody out, and keep your job. Who knew?
I disagree. I feel like that's a justifiable reason to go after someone. I need my chair.
It really sounded like Ben Stiller in Happy Gilmore.
Yeah.
You know, Mario got his chair, and he's like, oh, my back hurts, you know? your back hurts.
Yeah. Now your neck's going to hurt.
Exactly. It's history from there. But, yeah, they're gone. Gibby and Matt Shepard were filling in for the rest of the season after that. Who knows? Maybe we got them for the long haul. Are you going to listen to a Tigers game anyways?
You know, to be honest, I can't remember. I watch the games, but like I said for the Red Wings, too, in the pre-show, I keep the volume pretty low because I'm just kind of – I'm watching it for that. I don't really need your assessment of where Verlander went to dinner the other night or, you know, that Miggy only uses that bat because it's, you know, this or that. So, no, I'm probably not going to – it's not going to make a difference. I like Matt Shepard. I've met him multiple times at training camp for the Lions. He's a really nice guy. So I'm fine with that. You know, Gibby's obviously a legend here. He really is. I just, I don't know that he's your next, you know, guy. I feel like he did a great job of getting us through this little gap, but you almost need to find that next guy that's going to be doing this for the next, you know, 20 years. And Gibby's not going to be doing this for the next 20 years. So I think you need to, this is your chance to go out there, find the former Tiger player that, you know, wants to be in this industry that's good at doing this. No offense here, but it's not Craig Monroe. So you just need to find that guy. I don't really care who it is, but like you said, if I'm going to listen to these games, I want it to sound good. I listened to the Red Wings games the last couple of days. It's been Chris Osgood. I'm not a fan of Chris Osgood in that capacity. I don't mind him in the pre and post and the intermissions, but he's not the standalone guy that can give you the play-by-play and analysis of a game. We need that in Detroit sports. And I just don't think that – I love Gibby to death. He's a great guy, but I don't think he's the next one to be that. I think he was the good bridge to the next person.
Yeah, I mean, and if they want to keep filtering them in this year while they find someone, hey, okay. The product's not going to be all that great on the field anyways.
No.
He kind of gets by just on his legend alone, like you were saying. But no, I'd like to see a little more energy, color, enthusiasm, you know, out of a colored guy.
Yeah, that's fair. That's more than fair. Now, this will be a little fun. I want to just to see how weird we are about this. What to you is more absurd, LCA seat change or these two getting fired over this?
Well, first off, they should have been fired.
Yeah, I get it. But, I mean, the reason, like, a fight in any way is unacceptable. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's not like they were fighting because they hated each other. They were fighting because of a chair. So, we're arguing because it's about chairs at LCA, so it ties together.
That's fair. That's a good connection there. Yeah. I mean, it's absurd that it came to blows over something like this.
Yes.
I can only imagine it had to have been brewing for a long time. But I'm going to say it's more absurd that they're trying to change the seats at the LCA from red to black. That's not doing anything. I mean, Mario and Rod, they worked together for a long time. Mario started in 02, Rod in 03. That's a long time to work with someone and not punch him in the face. So I kind of get that.
Yeah, I mean, are you trying to tell me something? I mean, we've been friends that long, and I don't think we've ever punched each other in the face.
Man, you pick that up really quick.
I'm really good at subtle hints. I am.
Yeah.
It's like a, you know, big rubber mallet to the head. I'm gonna say that it's the LCA as well. It's stupid. I don't understand it. I don't get it.
Yep.
But on the flip side, so is, like you said, so is fighting someone over a chair. It makes no sense. I'm sure that booth had more chairs. And you could have sat in one of those. That to me is like one of those little, like, 5-year-olds, I was playing with it first kind of things. And it just doesn't make sense. So That's going to do it for us here on Armchair Sports Talk. Russ, I appreciate you taking the time. It's been another good show, I think.
Oh, yeah. It was a blast.
So until next time, that's one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.